Welcome back, and thanks for listening to the Coach's Playbook podcast. As Kentucky looks to reopen in the coming weeks, and other states have already done so, we will begin to follow the original plan of putting out one episode per week. We will release those episodes Thursday mornings, and I hope you continue to join us on this journey. Don't forget, if you enjoy the show, make sure to hit subscribe and give us 5 stars, like that 5-star rating your 5'1 point guard's dad said she got from the scouting service. On today's episode, we have head coach of the Assumption Rockets, Stacy Pendleton. He has an awesome story, and I would encourage every young coach and any coach of any sport to tune in and take notes. Enjoy. On today's episode, we are fortunate to have Coach Stacy Pendleton from Assumption High School join us. Coach Pendleton won a state championship in his previous coaching stint at DuPont Manual and has brought Assumption back to being a big-time contender in the gauntlet that is the 7th region. Coach Pendleton, thanks for joining the show.
My pleasure, Coach. Thanks for calling me up and asking me. Come on.
Yeah, for sure. I'm big on professional development, and I'm big on, you know, we ask the kids to get better. We ask the kids to do all these things. And so I constantly try to check myself and see if I'm getting better. And I really appreciate the coaches that are out there that are, you know, trying to work on their craft. And one thing before I ever even met you, you had sent me an email asking about, you had watched our All-A State game and asked about something. And, you know, it was kind of impressive to me because, you know, we were never going to play each other. You weren't an All-A school. So, you know, aside from just, you know, wanting to get better and wanting to see some things, you know, they just showed me that, wow, this guy probably really works at it. And I can tell through the details and some of the emails, we've sent some scouting report stuff back and forth, and I've been really impressed, and there's a reason why you've won at the level you have.
Well, thank you, and I remember that game vividly because you guys needed a three late in the game, and you touched your shoulder, and your point guard drove left and kicked back and drew the defense, and you got a great look, and it was a great set, a great special situation, you know, that just out of a call, and your kids responded well, and I was just really impressed with that, and I mean, I think some of the best things that I've stolen or borrowed or begged is mostly predominantly from high school coaches, you know, and scouting games. I mean, I've gotten a number of plays and things like that, defensive schemes from just going out to scout opponents. So yeah, you got to keep growing. You know, if you're not growing, you're not setting a good model for your kids, and you don't want to be stagnant, and definitely in coaching.
No, for sure. And it also allows you to, you know, I think be better for a long time and keep you sharp. So all that was just a big, you know, kind of pat on the back, just kind of blew me away before I ever really got to know you. But as I've gotten to know you better since moving to Louisville, you know, I both enjoy competing against you and also just listening to you talk about life and basketball. And you just really have an awesome perspective. You know, and one conversation that really stuck out to me when we were at Franklin County, we just talked about it being bigger than basketball. And I'd really love to go into it because I think it really hits home to every coach if you do this long enough and if you're a competitor. Can you just talk about how you have come to learn how to keep the main thing, and not let basketball and being a basketball coach define you?
Well, you know, it took a lot of growth and a lot of pain and a lot of mistakes to really come to this realization that my faith in God and my family were far superior to my prowess and success as a basketball coach. And I remember when I was and I've told this story a few times, so I apologize if anyone has already heard this, but I remember when we won the state championship in 2012, you know, I was pretty full of myself and, you know, I thought that, you know, this is something that I had spent, you know, the better part of my adult life chasing, you know, that this little country boy from Madera County could put, you know, put a team together, win a state championship. And I was pretty high on myself. And I remember sitting in my living room that day and looking at that state championship trophy and thinking about the reality of the situation hit me, thinking about all the things that chase had cost me and in my family and a lot of things that were wrong in my life. And as my faith grew and I continued to make some mistakes you know, thereafter, you know, I've become a lot more grounded about with my coaching. And I realized that it's not really the wins and the championships that matter. It's the, you know, the relationships, and it's the, you know, cause I really, what gives me, you know, my mojo and what I love about coaching is being around my players, you know, and this is, I'm almost in tears thinking about it right now because it's so tough right now because, you know, you just don't get to see them and, you know, and I know it's hard on them as well, but, to keep the main thing is, you know, God and family, and then far above teaching basketball skills and teaching kids how to do a Euro step or a layup or a fadeaway jump shot or a one-drill pull-up is you know, protecting your kids and helping them through life. I'm not perfect, you know, because I want to win. I mean, I'm as competitive as the next guy, and sometimes I lose it, but I'm going to, you know, I think there's a Bible verse that talks about, you know, it's okay to be competitive, and I'm thankful for that because I'd probably sin daily if it wasn't okay. Because you know, I haven't lost my competitive edge. I desire to win, but it's not the only thing. It's not what, and it, most importantly, it's not what defines me.
I think that's huge, and you know, is there, you know, I think when you're in a situation like that, I think it's just so easy to. Well, it's just kind of hard to see it. I mean, when you are kind of lost in the competitiveness of it, I think we make excuses for ourselves, and we, you know, we just think, well, that no one else understands or whatever that may be. Is there just maybe, you know, anything or any advice you've got for, you know, for a coach at any point in the stage of this thing that maybe you can do like a heart check or, you know, like, What was it that really allowed you to start going, okay, you know, where am I at with this thing? You know, it's just, I think it's good for us to kind of have an idea of how do I really evaluate myself? How can I take a look in the mirror and really be honest with myself?
You know, that's a difficult question for me to answer because, you know, God allowed me to win the state championship because he knew if we hadn't won that championship, I would not have changed because I would have never let up. And I was just like a dog on a bone, you know, I couldn't see anything else. And when we won it, I was like, wait a minute, this ain't what I thought it'd be, you know? And albeit it's great and it's a career defining moment, but you know, that the lessons that I've learned from it have been a far greater teacher. And now to answer that, you know, I think especially those of us who are married and have families, we need to make sure that our spouses are grounding us, you know, and my wife is so sweet that she's not really good at that. You know, she's a giver, you know, and sometimes she lets me go too far, you know, and without, you know, yelling me and kicking me in the teeth or bring me back home. But I'm also very, a lot more cognizant of the time that I spend away from my family. You know, my daughters are 14 and 11 now. And when I retired from coaching at Manual, they were 4 and 7. So, and it was tough because I was never seeing them. So you've got to make sure, you know, that you spend the time. And I know I don't feel like I've really answered that question because now it's pretty obvious to me, but it's easier for me too. Why? Because I've won it, I've done it, and I'm not sure I could be as relaxed if I hadn't have. And I mean, that's just the truth, you know. Because I mean, I was very, very, very determined to win a state championship, and I'm glad I wasn't very, very determined to win too, because I might still be going nuts. but you know, you just gotta make sure, you know, pray, you know, focus on God, and that'll help. You know, that'll help a lot, especially it helps me.
Sure. And I'm the exact same way when it comes to, you know, I search for all these answers, and I really try to be introspective, and I'll spend a week trying to figure something out in my head, and then I go back to, it'll just kind of hit me, you know, God talking about not leaning on our own understanding. And then it hits me. I'm like, man, I am a huge idiot. Like, I just spent all this time worrying about it. And, you know, I could have prayed about it and it'd been over in a second. So, and I make that mistake about once every, you know, month. So, and one more thing that someone asked me, a Christian mentor of mine, a guy that had been a coach and had stepped down, he caught me in the hall one day when I was at Murray. And he asked me, he said, just kind of out of nowhere, I think he knew I needed it. He asked me, he said, who are you? And I kind of looked at him funny and, you know, just kind of a weird question. Like, I mean, obviously, you know, I was like, I don't know, Coach Faust. And, you know, before I could even get the words out of my mouth, it had hit me and I knew where it was going. And, you know, and I was like, man, like, that's who I am. That's, you know, what defines me. And, you know, he said, you know, who is Wyatt? You know, like, what do you like? And I had gotten so far away from, you know, the simple things and, you know, just enjoying a White Sox baseball game, you know, enjoying just spending time, just doing nothing, just being around people you love. And it hit me really hard. And, you know, I just, that if you, you know, ask yourself, just, you know, take some time, find somewhere quiet and really ask yourself who you are. And if it's Coach so-and-so, I think it's a huge, I think that's probably a problem. Because investing in something that can just be gone in a second is really tough.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of coaches and myself included that, you know, we are defined by being a coach, you know, because it's kind of, even though it's really just girls basketball. And I mean, it's not highly followed. There's a lot of people who want to be coaches. They live vicariously through us as coaches. You know, when you go to things and when you go to cookouts and stuff like that, what do you do? And I'll say I'm a teacher and a basketball coach. And then we spend time talking about coaching, you know, so that kind of makes us, I don't know, quasi celebrity status, you know, because everybody can relate to that. Most everybody. So, and another thing that you can tell coaches that are really, you know, full of themselves, you know, is they own the wins, but not the losses, you know, and they say things like, well, I did this and I'm going to do this. And, you know, and those are things that, you know, are indicators that you really need to be careful because you're putting, and again, I'm trying not to be judgmental. I was just reading in Matthew this morning about not, you know, don't judge others, but, you know, cause I do the same things. But you got to be careful about not making it about you, you know, and always trying to make it about your players whenever possible.
Yeah, that's dead on. And yeah, that's been the biggest kind of change that I've tried to make over the years is that piece of it. So I could go on forever about this stuff, because at the end of the day, this is the stuff that is career changing and life changing, more importantly. But but let's do get into some other stuff, because, you know, I think of, you know, you got an awesome story, but you've also got a good basketball mind. So I want to get into that as well. But, you know, when I think about your teams, and we played each other twice this year, so we watched a lot of film on you guys and try to prepare. But I think the thing that comes to mind for me was just how well designed your offense was. There's layers to the offense. It's hard to guard. There's multiple actions and options that play off of each other. And then the biggest thing to me, and I always think when I think about really good coaching, is you've got the right players taking the right shots at the right times. You can tell they play in their roles well. They play their strengths, and the offense is designed to their strengths. So with all that being said, when you're planning your offense for a particular year, for a particular team, do you run the same actions year to year, or does it change, or do you just change where you put your players? Do you look at your personnel and go find things to run that may best suit them? How does that process work for you?
You know, it's offense for me has changes almost every year. I will run very similar fast break transition hits and things like that I've done throughout my career. I did a few things at Manual that I don't do at Assumption, just essentially because I have, you know, we had better athletes at Manual and it didn't work as well. But this year in particular, I probably did my best job, most thorough job of preparing for the year offensively. In that before the year started, I knew exactly, I had planned exactly what we were going to do and how we were going to score. Now, it worked sometimes and it didn't work others, you know, but this was probably, we were a pretty effective offensive team considering, you know, that we didn't really have any breakdown off the dribble players. I mean, if you think about my team, we had zero kids that were really going to break you down. Probably the best one was the soccer player, Matty Reed, mm-hmm. you know, but nobody else was driving by you and drawing fouls. So with that in mind, I created a new offense to fit the team. And I'll be honest with you, I'm going to create a new one to fit this year's team because we changed personnel. So to answer your question, you know, you've got to, in high school basketball, we can't recruit to our system. You know, it was a little easier at Manual because I knew what I was going to get every year. You know, I mean, I was going to get the cream of the crop pretty much every year. So, but you've got to create offense that fits your personnel. Now, I this year's team for me was a little easier because Matty Nally was a good passer. You know, so I knew that I could get pressure relief by kicking back to Matty and things like that. So we created offense that got the ball in her hands a lot. You know, and when teams were real physical and took her out, it became a lot harder for us to score. You know, Manuel did a phenomenal job with that. And y'all did in the second half, you know, the game you beat us in overtime. So, but the way you beat us both games, but the closer game. But, you know, to answer your question, my offense changes. You know, and in the state championship game, I jokingly tell people all the time that we ran three plays the whole game. You know, and we just ran dribble drive because, I mean, we were playing Marion County. And, I mean, they just smothered you defensively. You couldn't do anything against them. So, you know, the offense changes this year was probably I encourage new coaches to sit down, especially if you know the kids you've got, to sit down and map out what you want to run and overview and map out when you want to put it in. I've done this for years. I mean, I don't try to have everything in by the first game. You know, I layer it and we put in things, bam, 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 you know, so like I might have two offensive hits and five man hits or whatever by the first scrimmage game, you know, and then we just keep layering it. So I'll be honest with you, Wyatt, I think I'm a terrible offensive coach. I always have thought I was a terrible offensive coach. I mean, I'm not a quick thinker, like I need to be, or probably as good as I could be. But this year I kind of got on the front end of it and prepared a lot more than I usually do.
I think that's a great point. I think, especially if you know yourself and, you know, if you feel like, you know, then let's, you know, any adjustments that we need to make, if we can have the counter already in our offense, then it's easy on everybody involved. And that's what you guys did. It just seemed like as soon as you took away one thing, the next thing opened, and that's the sign of good offense. And like you said, it's, I think you have to look at your team and be conscious about it. I think a lot of people see an offense they like and, you know, or they see, well, you know, hey, I'm a UK fan and they run dribble drives. So let's do it. And you got a bunch of, just stocky kids that can shoot it a little bit and set some screens. You know, you probably need to rethink your offense. And, you know, you guys could go three trips down the floor and only dribble the ball four times. And, you know, and then it's hard to take it from teams that won't dribble it, you know, if they just pass it and screen and, so there's some really good stuff there. And, you know, one thing I think sometimes, especially even when I was a young coach and I still am, but it was hard for me to get over myself to ask people, you know, I thought I had to know it because I'm the coach, but I would have been much better served to ask somebody about, you know, offense or, you know, about, hey, what are some things you've done? You know, because I think a lot of people maybe don't know where to go. Like, okay, well, you know I have these pieces, but I don't really know what to run with it. So I'll just run what I know. But I think you'd be a great resource.
That's a big mistake. I mean, that's a big mistake if high school coaches are stubborn and set in their ways and they don't develop their team based on their players. I think that's paramount to winning at the high school level. And I've learned that especially, you know, coaching at Assumption as comparatively speaking to Manual, because I have a totally different set of players, you know, so I've had to do things different. this year I also focused a lot on, you know, how to catch the ball and how to get yourself set to pass the ball with good timing, you know. And those things are, we put in plays as coaches and we say, well, you know, you set this back screen and you curl and, you know, you throw it to them and they should be open. You know, if they don't open, another person pops and she's got a jump shot. But, you know, but we don't think about, especially with players that are not all Division One, we don't think about them having the timing and them having the ability to jab step and rip and create space and, it, you know, and handle pressure. And we spent a crap load of time in the preseason just doing that. I mean, we probably spent 20 minutes a day just handling pressure and ripping and getting the ball where it needs to be and when it needs to be there. And I mean, and we got better because of it. And strength, you know, strength helps with that too. But
yeah.
But anyway, all right.
Yeah. And coming from Murray to Louisville or to Butler,
you flip the other way.
So. Yeah. It's, but you find out how much, you know, the fundamentals matter everywhere, but how much better you have to be at timing of passes, angles of screens, those things. The margin for error is just a lot smaller,
right?
With the, you know, when you're coaching there, and that's something to keep in mind as well when you're there. So, I had a coach one time tell me, and I thought this was pretty good. And he said that players, you know, your player and the talent level is going to control about 90% of the game, and as coaches, we're fighting for that other 10%. And I thought that was pretty interesting. And he was a boys coach. And I actually think that on the girls side, it might be a little more like 80-20 or so. I don't know. There's hard to put numbers to it. But I think as a coach, really, you know, in game, it is our job to steal points any way we can for our team. You know, my team's going to go and, you know, they're going to be talented and we're going to, you know, but I'm going to help them any way I can. I'm going to try to help them steal points. So when you're preparing for a specific opponent, what are some ways that you steal points for your team?
Well, this question intrigues me because, you know, and I think I said earlier, you know, I think I called three plays in the state championship game, and one was an out of bounds play out of a timeout that we got wide open layup, you know, and when you're talking about a game with, I think there were 9 Division I kids out on the floor in that state championship game, you know, there's not a lot of mistakes made defensively. You know, so like you said, you know, you got to, they're going to close gaps faster and, you know, kids are going to have to make plays. So I feel like that in that game, 90% of the game was determined by the talent, you know, because, you know, we were just rebounding and beating them up the floor. And that's the only reason we won, because we were in better shape. And we, you know, when we scored off transition more than they did, at Assumption, you know, I feel like that 90%, for me, has been lowered to 70-80%, you know, and it's become more apparent to me that I have to instill more discipline and have to be more, I have to program them a little bit more than I ever did with the kids I had at Manual. But the way that we steal points, I think you can steal points subjectively with effort. Okay. And you see a lot of coaches out there. Mark Evans was the best I ever coached against about stealing points with just effort. Chris Stallings and Bullies, they do a really good job of that. You know, they steal points with effort. You know, they dive on the floor. Or they'll go after, you know, there's never a dead ball, you know. So you can steal points with effort. Another thing you can steal points, and I've always been okay with this. I've struggled a little more at Assumption for some reason, but out of bounds plays, you know, and I think we stole several points this year, especially early on with their out of bounds plays, you know, and so those are ways that you steal points. And then the third way is being prepared in special situations. You know, you've got to, and being prepared, some coaches, you know, like Jeff Walls at Louisville, they you know, down two with 4 seconds to go, it's in his mind. He can draw it up. He's just amazing at that. I'm not that good. You know, I need to, you know, I'm constantly looking over my playbook and trying to remember them and things like that, you know, and it just works best for me if I can just, like, you know, turn to that page and like, okay, girls, we're running this, you know, and so those are the ways you steal points for your teams. But I think most importantly, you can steal points, you know, subjectively with their effort, you know, with the, just concentrating on defense and getting a deflection, and that creates disrupts the other team's offense.
Yeah.
So
the effort one, you're spot on, and I think it's just you would sit here and you'd go, okay, well, I mean, how effort? I mean, I'm gonna give effort. It's not. I mean, that's not a given. I mean, that is far.
No, it's not.
It's far.
Hell no,
from
it's
given.
Not. No way. No.
No. And I've found that out the hard way at times.
Yeah,
especially
sure.
This year. But let's let's talk about late games. Go ahead.
Let me talk about that for a moment, because I really feel like, and some coaches would probably scoff at this and disagree with me, but I feel like we are 100% accountable for the effort that our kids don't give. And we've got to find a way to make sure that these kids are given maximum effort. And if we don't, you know, it's our job to get it out of them or to get rid of them, you know. That get rid of them part is a small percentage, you know, because once we keep our kids, we got to find a way for them to be successful. A football coach once told me, Oliver Lucas, football coach at Manual, he and I are great friends. He said, "Stacy, there is an I in my team. You got to take care of the I's before the team will work." And he was a pretty progressive dude for, you know, be up in his 60s. But he's right. You know, kids nowadays, man, they're just not going to run through a wall for the team. You know, some of them will. I had a whole lot of them like that this year. Very selfless kids. But dude, we've got to make sure our kids are comfortable and they're willing to perform for us, you know. And you know, that's probably something that I've been pretty decent at as a coach, you know. Because I mean, I constantly tell my kids, you know, it's your team, you know, you've got to do this, and, you know, I'm just gonna sit over and yell, you got to do it, and after last year, my assumption team didn't own that. This year, they owned it. They owned being – it was their team, you know, and that's key. So, anyway.
Well, yeah, I think you're spot on. You definitely – you get exactly what you allow. And effort and shot selection, you know, the other thing, a lot of people may not agree – I think shot selection is on the coach too. You know, if a kid shot, you know, 100 threes and shot at 22%, you know, I think there's a point in time where about 50 of those misses are your fault because you let them keep shooting. So
yeah, and that's a tough conversation to have with a kid, you know. So you don't need to be shooting.
it sure is. All right, Coach, we're kind of nearing the time crunch here. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to throw a full court press on you. So you're going to have 10 seconds or less to answer some rapid fire questions. All right.
All right.
Does high school need a shot clock?
I've never needed one as a coach. I think it logistically would be tough, but I'd like to see it.
Okay. Up three with 8 seconds left, ball's at half court. Are you fouling or playing it out?
Not fouling. I'm going to play it out, make sure we get a rebound. Girls players hit free throws too at a high percentage.
Toughest place to play in Kentucky?
Anywhere outside of Louisville when you're a Louisville team. Rowan County was one of the toughest places I've ever seen.
That's good. Favorite high school gym in Kentucky aside from your own?
You know, that one's tough for me. I really don't know. I like E-Town. I've spent a lot of time down there. But E-Town's a nice gym.
Okay. Do you spend a greater portion of practice on offense or defense?
Probably 60% defense, 40% offense. This year, it's probably 50-50.
Okay. Best hidden food gym in Louisville?
I like the Holy Grail on Bardstown Road. They got great hamburgers.
All right, good stuff, Coach. Hey, I really appreciate having you on. I really hope, like I said, I really hope everybody tunes in. There's just a lot of value,
right,
I think, in your basketball mind. And anybody that's looking to design offense, I think they ought to come holler at you.
Man, thank you so much for doing this. This has really been good for me. When you messaged me, I was like, oh man, I ain't thought about basketball. I mean, I have to knock the cobwebs off. But it's been really nice to talk basketball. So thank you so much for doing this. I appreciate it, and thank you for working to improve our game.
Yep. Thanks, Coach. See ya.
All right. See you. Bye.
For Coach Pendleton, this has been Wyatt Faust, and thanks for listening to the Coach's Playbook podcast. Join us next Thursday as we have head coach of the GRC Cardinals, Robbie Graham, on
to discuss a variety of topics on building a program and sustaining success. Until then, keep getting better.